Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
53106 is our text number. That'll cost you 30 cents. You can send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com, or you can phone us up. 1890 453 106 is the number. Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm a single mother, not me. This is the first person who's writing into us. I'm a single mother with two kids, 12 and 9. I'm starting a new job next week and I can't get a sitter for them. I'm considering letting the 12-year-old mind the 9-year-old for a few hours while I work. Is 12 too young to be given that responsibility? She's not a bad kid and generally well behaved. I thought it would be a good test for her. Am I wrong to put that pressure on her?
Look, I mean, there's no set legal minimum age for babysitting, okay? I mean, really, the guideline is that the babysitter's level of maturity, emotional maturity, is, I mean, because you could have a very responsible 14-year-old and a very irresponsible 17-year-old. You really have to use your discretion. Now, that being said, I'm just going to say, in my opinion, and I'll own that, in my opinion, 12 is too young to be in charge or in the providing care for a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
And it there's so many other things in this that it depends on. I mean, I empathize. A single mother, you've got to work, and we know countrywide childcare is hard to get. It's expensive to get. Mm-hmm. You know, there isn't an easy answer here, and the pressure to work, you know, is a real life consideration. So I would say it would be a good test for her. No, this isn't the way to test independence or trust. There are other opportunities to practice that, you know, under your supervision, long before she'd be ready to do this. You know, because the only reason, as I read in my inference here, the only reason you're considering letting your 12-year-old do it is because you can't find somebody else. So that for me would beg the question, are you truly happy to do this? Like, if you had another option, would you go with the other option?
She's kind of trying to convince herself a bit.
Kind of,
you know?
Yeah, that is how it sounds. So it, look, ultimately it's a parental decision. So if you are going to do this, I would say really be clear about who is nearby. What are the, you say a few hours, how many hours, what time of day, who is available to your 12-year-old in a hurry, should they need help very quickly, and how often? And also, are you stuck for childcare simply because they're still on school holidays, in which case, aren't schools back next week or the end of next week or the week after? So is this kind of a one-off thing, or are you looking at making this a regular arrangement? So I think there's a few things to weigh up. Overall, I'm going to encourage you to exhaust every avenue over a 12-year-old minding a 9-year-old.
Yeah. If it was just maybe as a one-off or just a few days as a stopgap.
And if you have a neighbour or a relative who's going to check in and be available and knock on the door and say, are you guys okay? And making sure that you do that. I mean, if you're going to do it, I would probably, you know, is it a good test for her? I'd probably test it where you're going out of the house for 45 minutes and you're going out of the house for an hour and you're going out of the house for an hour and a half, rather than simply the first time your children are left that you leave for a prolonged period of time. Yeah. So there's a few things, but I just would urge caution about it. 12 is young.
Yeah, it is young. My 10 and 7-year-olds have been at my wife and I constantly to get a dog. We've been refusing for a long time now. After persistent badgering, we made a deal. I brought a plant and told them that if they could keep that alive, I would consider a dog. Well, this has completely backfired on me. The plant died as it went from green and flourishing to brown and falling apart. When I pointed it out to them, they were devastated, tears, snot, the whole lot. I tried to console them and said we'd start again with a new plant and pretend it didn't happen. But the eldest one says she's not good enough and shouldn't be allowed to have anything. She's really down on herself. The other day she said she was a horrible person. That broke my heart. This is not what I intended at all. I'm at a total loss as to what to do. I can't turn up with a dog because I don't think they're ready, and no amount of sweets will fix this. Please help.
Oh my God, it was such a good idea at the beginning and it all went wrong. So look, I would say you've got to go back at this and reframe it. I mean, first of all, I read this and I kind of thought, you know, that poor plant sounds like every plant that's ever come into my house. You know, it's not always neglect. Sometimes plants don't flourish under your watch. That's just the way it goes. Can you reframe it? Sit with the children, both of them together, and explain how a plant is not the same as a dog, is not the same as a person or a living thing dying. You know, that you were just encouraging them to think about things needing care, but it's not the same that they've died. You're going to have to do a bit of explanation around that. And that plants can die for lots of reasons, such as not being in the right position in the house, not having enough light and air. Maybe make it about something more abstract than lack of care. I like the start over suggestion this parent's making, but I'm going to put something in here that one option you have is that you could sit with them and gift each child a packet of seeds, you know, plant seeds, flower seeds, and a little pot and, you know, a little set around planting the seeds, and say that when they each feel ready, they can plant their own seeds and there's no pressure. So if one child's like, yeah, I'm over the plant dying, I'm ready to go, they can do it now. And if the other child's like, no, I'm not ready to start this over, they've got the seeds at their disposal when they feel ready to move on. So I think that could be something to be helpful. The other thing, I agree, look, the answer is not to get a dog. Okay, that's definitely it. But I'm also going to suggest that you go back to the children and maybe own something, that it's not actually incumbent on the children to establish if they're ready for a dog, because a dog is a family commitment. Parent gets a dog and on the firm belief my child is going to take sole responsibility for the dog. You get this eyes wide open that you're going to be doing a lot of doggy care. Mm. So maybe own it and say that you didn't explain it very well and actually you're not ready for the family to have a dog and you need more time. So it's not just them, but as a family, you want to take more time before getting a dog and you're going to do other stuff instead. So I would tend to go back and own some of this yourself, reframe what has happened, and don't dismiss her feelings when she says, you know, I'm a horrible person. Don't dismiss that as in, of course, yeah, you're not, but reframe it for her that it's that you're feeling horrible right now. You're not horrible, but you're feeling horribly because this happened. And there are things we can do to feel better about that. Yeah. And that's where I would see maybe giving her the choice when she's ready to plant her own seeds rather than you bringing a plant in. Letting her start literally from scratch with seeds.
But as long as she did, given that the original plant was, you get plant then dog, if he comes back with more seeds, they're just going, this is, you know, that's dog action at the end of this.
I would separate the two. I mean, linking the two. I mean, it was high risk anyway, because I don't think that this parent wants a dog. And what if the plant did make it? Now you'd have a dog and a plant.
Yeah.
You know, so I think don't be afraid as a parent to say, we're not getting a dog because we as a family are not ready for that. Instead of making it about the children.
Yeah.
If I
children often, in my experience, anyway, they have fantastical notions about their own abilities.
Of course, and their commitment is flawless in their heads.
They will find it hard to accept that, even if you say, well, I'm not ready, I can't. They go, no, but you don't have to, I'll do everything.
But that's why
you won't, yes I will.
You have to say it's about a family decision. It's not about the children getting a dog and it's the children's dog. It has to be seen as a family choice and a family dog.
Yeah.
Because then everyone has to be ready and on the same page. And that way you're sharing the responsibility for the choice.
Mm. Could there also be, you know, 10-year-old girl playing piano? I'm so sad. Can I have a dog?
Yeah, I'll feel so better if you know. Yeah. It doesn't sound like that in this instance, but I think that's a valid wondering. Yeah. Let me put it that way. But in this instance, I don't think that's the case, because I think there's full on tears, devastation, and she's feeling terribly as a person that she killed this plant or neglected this plant. So it is important that you separate out the plant from the living creature thing.
Yeah. Someone says, instead of a plant, start with a cactus. I assume because a cactus is more difficult to kill. On the subject of the first question we got, is a 12-year-old old enough to mind a 9-year-old? I babysat my brother and sister at 12. I think it depends on the child. Mm-hmm. That's true. Then again, it's also different if it's day in, day out. That's a completely different responsibility.
There's huge variables. If it's daytime hours, if it's nighttime hours, and what are they expected to get lunch for their younger sibling? Like, what are the expectations? There's huge variables in that one.
Yeah, someone else has a faithless dilemma, but my eldest was 15 at the time. I was a nervous wreck even then. Yeah. And someone else says, both myself and my wife work. Our childminder went to Australia in June. We have left our 3 children at home. They're aged 8, 10 and 12. I'm self-employed and work 10 minutes away if there's any grief, and our neighbours are there too, just in case. We're both a little hesitant at the start, but 2 months later it's all good. Okay, well, glad to hear this. worked out. My daughter has started painting her nails. She's 4 and loves getting them done. That's fine and sweet and all the rest, but I've caught her on a few occasions smelling my nail varnish. I think she may be a bit addicted. I'm still trying to work out how her little hands open the bottles. I'm now not letting her get her nails painted as I don't want her developing a thing for varnish. She's very upset. I can't explain addiction to a 4-year-old if that's what it is. What can I do?
I don't think it's an addiction, first of all, so I would take that word out of the mix. It might be, you know, a compulsion to repeat because the smell is so strong and probably engages her senses in quite a startling way. So she's seeking to repeat that experience. So I wouldn't think it's an addiction, just to reassure you. The fact that you've stopped her painting her nails and she's upset, she possibly has experienced this not as you being cautious or caring that it's not good for her. She may have experienced it as a punishment and she's not sure what she's being punished for.
Yeah.
So just to kind of clarify around that, I can empathise with you're not sure how the little hands open the bottles. I mean, little hands are just incredibly gifted at things you wouldn't expect them to be. I'm assuming she's not smelling nail polish throughout the day, every day. So the risk to her health is actually minuscule. And you can get child-friendly, non-toxic, environmentally eco-friendly, water-based nail polishes that are free from chemicals. So a little bit of a really simple little internet search will land you on a few of those. I know there's one called Piggy Paint, which is targeted at children, and that's one of many. So you have an option around that. But use the boundaries that you would anyway, that only grown-ups touch the polish bottles. We always paint our nails by an open window, and obviously put them out of her reach or put them away in a little locked box when they're not in use. So that might be a way of just putting a boundary around it. So I would just want to reassure you that I seriously doubt she's addicted to the smell. And unless she is inhaling huge amounts of it, a huge amount of the time, her health is safe. So maybe just switching the product and putting a boundary around it might be enough so that she's not feeling punished.
Yeah, and I can't stand the smell of it.
I don't
myself,
like it either. Yeah.
It like makes my eyes water. Yeah. But other people seem to kind of
love it.
Yeah.
And it depends on the kind of sensory stimulation that you respond well or not well to. So that's what I would, that's my inference reading it, is that it's more about, you know, that gave her a sensory jolt and she's seeking to repeat that. There's something about the smell she's drawn to.
Yeah.
So again, just repeat some rules with her, but move to a non-toxic, non-chemical product. Because there's something nice with, you know, lots of children love having their nails painted. It's a nurturing kind of routine because you get to hold their hand and they sit still and you've that moment of meeting and connection that's really quite nice. And it's always better to do that at home yourself than bringing small children to a salon where, by the way, the smell is very strong. But it's inappropriate in one way to bring a child that young when it's a lovely parent-child thing to do it at home between you and their child. And they often just want to emulate what their mothers are doing.
Going back to that 12-year-old minding the 9-year-old, someone texted in to say, I have a friend who has her 12-year-old minding her 10, 8 and 6-year-old siblings from 9 o'clock in the morning till 3 p.m. in the afternoon daily during the summer, unless they're at a camp. Wow.
I think that is a lot to ask of any 12-year-old.
A lot to ask of an adult.
Exactly. I would think that's an awful lot to put on a young... A 12-year-old, let's be clear, is still a child developmentally. Even the mature, responsible ones are still children.
Yeah, now this person, I would imagine, probably doesn't have that much of an option, but it is a heavy burden.
Again, it comes back to, and again, not to get into a kind of blaming or bad parenting thing, because not to excuse, but explain, childcare is a very difficult thing for families at the moment in terms of its availability and cost. So I do empathise with the struggle, but we've got to look at alternatives and more family-friendly work policies, maybe, rather than putting upon young children.
Yeah. Going back to the question we got about getting a dog, someone sexed in to say, maybe you should just say, we're not getting a dog because I'm a parent. And I said, no. Yeah, kids respond so well to that, I found. I just say, I'm a parent. I said, no. And they go, oh, yeah, okay, Dad.
I think this parent might kind of wish they'd done that, but they, in fairness, went down a creative route about, let's use this as a teaching opportunity for independence and responsibility. And that was good. The basis was good. It was just, it hasn't worked out for one of the two children.
And someone else says, as someone who was working in rescue for years, this is dog rescue. Yeah. I'm so happy to hear your guest's advice in relation to dogs. Kids always want dogs. It's the parent who is responsible for the care of the dog. Well done, they say.
Thank you.
We do have to take a break though, and the next question, I'm afraid, won't please that person who texted in. It's about a 6-year-old who's being mean to the dog. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Joanna Fortune is still with us. We did get a question about kids wanting a dog. Someone says, I wanted a dog when I was younger. My ma said, fine, as long as it's one that doesn't poop. I didn't have much luck in finding that particular breed. We'd all like to find that particular breed. And we also get the question about the four-year-old who loves painting her nails and seems to like the smell of the varnish. Someone says, my eight-year-old son loves the smell of canned dog food. It's his job to feed our dogs and he inhales the smell after he opens the can. Go figure.
So yeah, it's a sensory stimulation.
Yeah, your son's obviously addicted to canned dog food. It'll all go terribly wrong. My six-year-old son keeps being very mean and physical with the dog. He rubs him far too hard and has been known to push the dog out of the way. The poor dog is a very gentle soul and takes it in its stride. I've been trying to teach him that he can't be mean to the dog and he needs to be gentle. I don't think he's listening to me. How can I teach him to be careful and not bully the dog?
Yeah, I mean, look, again, not this case, but generally speaking, younger kids can, you know, inadvertently be too rough with pets because, you know, they touch to learn. That's developmentally what young children do. And trial and error is part of their learning process. So in lots of ways, the answer would be take the little hand that's being too rough. And while you hold it tightly, you stroke their hand gently and you say, this is how we touch the dog, this, and you repeat that. And often that can be enough because it's something that you can gently yet firmly correct, because there is obviously a risk to both child and dog when something like that's going on. In this instance, six, I would expect a six-year-old to have a little bit more understanding, generally speaking, about this. So you say he keeps being very mean and physical with the dog and rubs him too hard and has been known to push him away. So I'm wondering, is there something else going on? Like, is that when he's in trouble? Is that when he's tired? When he's hungry? So is he in a state of some kind of dysregulation and he lashes out? I'm not saying that's okay. I'm just trying to understand it, and hurts the dog. So ask yourself why. Is there a pattern to it? Is it when he's angry or sad himself? And when you say you don't think he's listening to you, you're probably right, because I think generally when you have to ask yourself, are you listening to me? The answer is no. But try and address it by doing rather than saying. So that would mean when the dog is targeted by your child, you in front of your child lavish the comfort and attention on the dog rather than on the child, and try to model some of that. Do try the take the hand thing and say it. But I think also a trip to the ISPCA or a dog shelter nearby, obviously call them first to make sure that's okay and that someone's available, and have somebody there talk to him about how animals need kindness and how it can feel for an animal if somebody is mean to them or cruel to them, and try to make it more human and personable for him. I think that that could help. But I suppose I've got questions about why is it happening and when.
Yeah. My son is four, is starting Montessori in September. He's a lovely little boy, loves playing with kids and running around. My problem is that he still can't count to 10 and struggles with the alphabet. We've been singing it to him and helping him learn it for so long now, but he still can't grasp it. I thought at four he should be retaining this information. Will he be at a disadvantage going into Montessori? I don't want him being left behind.
Oh, stop worrying. No, I mean, should he be doing it at four? There's no should about this stuff. Yeah. There really isn't. And I think, you know, we can drive ourselves crazy thinking, you know, what someone else's four-year-old is doing, or our previous four-year-old, you know, or another child when they were four were doing. Each child is different. The teaching him to count and the alphabet and things like that, I don't want you to worry, because that's literally the job of Montessori. That's why you're sending him there.
Yeah.
So they will do this, and they have all kinds of growth development strategies to do that. They have all kinds of creative learning strategies. They blend in play. They look at, you know, children's self-learning in terms of their own pace, letting them work it out that way. Now at home with you is a time for your child just to play and be themselves and explore the world through play. Social engagement is the focus. So the learning and academic stuff will kick in. So just stop worrying about it, honestly. But when you say, will he be at a disadvantage going in? No.
No, because
absolutely
it's not required.
Absolutely not. They're going to reteach it even if he did know it.
Yes, Absolutely. And I suppose singing it to him is no harm.
Oh, no, it's lovely. You're not doing anything wrong. Don't stop doing it, but don't expect that he nail it and can, you know, do basic letters and numbers before going. Four is really young.
Yeah.
And under four, it's really all about sensory play and touch and exploring the environment in a kind of skin-to-skin way. So it's all about eye contact and nursery rhymes and rhythm and synchrony and those kinds of activities. So counting through song and alphabet through song, brilliant. Keep doing it.
Yeah.
But just, you know, manage the expectations.
Yeah. I wonder at that age, do they even know what it means anyway? My little one will go 1, 2, 3, 14.
Completely. Or because you would condition them through repetition by going 1, 2, 3. If you then, and they, you say 1 and 2 and they can say back to you 3 and you think, marvellous. Then you say 4, 5 and you pause and they go 3.
Yes.
Because they know that's their word every time you pause. So it's not that they get the sequencing of numbers. It's that they learn through repetition and they take their cues from us. So when we teach them things and sounds and words, they're just repeating the sound as opposed to the word.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's a concept, which is probably difficult for...
Musicality and using that kind of prosody of voice, your pitch, pace, tone up and down, that's all really, really good for, you know, their brain development, but their social engagement system. That's all super stuff. So keep doing it. Like sing everything. Sing whatever you're doing. Sing it. It doesn't even have to be a nursery rhyme. And if you forget the words, make it up, because your child's not going to call you out on that at that age. At that age. They will later.
I know all parents say their kids are gorgeous, but mine really is stunning. I'm considering putting her forward for different child campaigns. Will this have a negative effect on her as a baby or even as she grows up? I want her to be grounded, but if she makes money from this, I can put it into her savings when she's older. Am I wrong to start down this road?
No, I mean, I'm laughing because, you know, everyone thinks their kids are gorgeous, but mine really is. Of course, everyone believes that. Yeah. And that's right and how it should be. And, you know, perhaps your child really is especially beautiful. But this is basically a personal parenting choice. There isn't a right or wrong here. Whether you go down the route of child modelling is entirely up to you. I would say, though, and I stand to be corrected if any child modelling agents are listening, I would imagine it's got a lot more to do with a child's temperament at this age than how they look, because you could have a stunning child who screams in front of a camera, or you could have a child who's attractive but very charming and engaging in front of a camera.
What they want is a baby who can smile on command.
That's
basically
kind of it.
Yeah, and not not snot
exactly
all over their face.
So
yeah.
I wouldn't get too caught up in the physicality of the appearance, but if it's something you want to explore, why don't you contact a reputable agency, and that would be one that isn't asking you to pay for photos, by the way. Usually you sending a couple of photos would be enough. But when you contact them to get information, I'm going to suggest you also ask, you know, if they could contact somebody who's already on their books, a parent of a child model that you could talk to and say, well, what is this like? What is it involved in it? How has it been for your child? And get a little bit of information. If you go ahead and proceed, why don't you take it, do one or two jobs and see, is it for you or not? Is it for your child, moreover, or not? Mm. Now, you mentioned here your child's a baby. In general, I'd say if the child is older, or when your child is older, be guided by them. If they tell you they don't want to do this, then don't do it to stop.
Yeah.
This should be fun, because in terms of making money for them, you know, look, they have their whole lives to make money for themselves and to become self-sustainable and all of that. But sure, if it's something you want to do, do it.
Also as well, when they're taking pictures of that kind of work for babies, anyway, as I understand, is very thin on the ground anyway.
I would think
and
so.
Oftentimes, your advantage is you've twins or triplets.
Yes.
Because then you can photograph one for 10, and they do that on movies as well.
Yeah, so that one can take a break, you know, under the rules of how long a child can be working, and the other one can sub in. So yeah, identical twins or multiples would be.
And one of mine did Billy Barry for a few years.
Yeah.
And that's, she was only a child, but like that's quite, you know, and Billy Barry was saying, we're a feeder. You can get advert work through us, or you can get professional work through us, and it's tough. And
absolutely.
Like, and you know, when like she'd go back every year and there'd always a new, a massive amount of kids are joining and their parents are there with pound signs in their eyes. And so they go, oh, yeah, you can all come in. That's no problem. And then they have them in. They try to teach them to dance for a week or so. And then they say, right, next week, you have to sing by yourself. bang, and the class is cut by three quarters, because that's when it comes.
All of those things really need to be fun. They need to be enjoyable and pleasurable. Yeah. And so that the sort of campaign work that may or may not come out of it is a secondary gain, but not the primary motivation. Mm. Because if your child is having fun doing whatever they're doing, that's what's going to be good for their self-esteem, for their social development, their emotional well-being. And if there's something else that comes out of it career-wise, and again, be really cautious about thinking about young children having careers. I mean, the job of being a child is to be a child.
Yeah.
You know, they really do have their... But if it's something your child is showing, you know, particular skills or talent in, and it's something you want to nurture, so long as they're enjoying it, go forth and do it. But if not, you'll have a job on your hands anyway, because your child will make it difficult.
Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break. After that, living in a country with 1,000,000% inflation.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.